Hello and welcome back to the Truck and Driver podcast. I'm Dougie Rankin and I'm joined once more by
Matt Hyland.
Hi Matt, how you doing? All right? What's been happening in your world of trucks and so on and so forth?
Yeah, I'm all right, mate. Thanks for asking. I can't believe it's October. I mean, today I got up to about 22 degrees today at work. I was getting a proper sweat on, which was quite unexpected for this time of year.
Not up here.
No, really?
No, nothing like it at all. Ah. 22 degrees all summer. What were you doing today? Were you driving?
Yes, mate, yeah. The usual stuff on the sawdust and the wood shavings. So, still ticking along on that, which is nice. But, yeah, it's been a proper lovely. It's been like a summer's day pretty much today, which is, yeah, quite surprising. So, I actually did a skip. It's a much more local one today, one that gets done about every 6 months or so. Did that first, and then a King's Lynn changeover and back and walk it off, and that was my day done. So nice easy day.
Oh, well, that's good. What are you driving at the moment? It's a Renault, isn't it?
Yes, mate. Yeah, Renault, T-Range and a T-Range 8-wheeler, which I can't remember the model, which I should do, but I can't. It's an 8x4. I think you could probably get away with probably a 6x4 quite easily, or even a 6x2, realistically, on the job, because the weight is never too much of an issue. But whether there's that many chassis available, I don't know. But it's a 69 plate, and it's not done a huge amount, so I doubt it will get replaced for some time. But it's annoying, because next week I'm away on holiday, and it's actually in for its MOT, and I was kind of... The spare truck, I think I've told you before, I can't remember if I've mentioned on the podcast, is a version 1 FM12 8-wheeler, and I'm itching to have a drive in it, and it just, the opportunity has escaped me so far. And I did say to them, look, you know, that's got to pass as MOT, so I won't be happy if the spare truck comes out and I'm not here. I'll be most upset.
Yeah, that'd be, yeah, but a good old thing to drive that. I was down in South Wales at Kilmarthen seeing Richard Jones the other week, because we've got his lorry in the forthcoming Volvo Special, which is an FM, but it's a one-of-a-kind FM because it's a 540.
Oh, right.
8-wheeler Tridom, which you can't officially get a 540, but he got a customer adaption done for it because... it's only running at 32 tonnes, and they're up to you. Generally, they want you to take an FMX if you want a 540 with the FM cab. But he's like, yeah, it's only running at 32 tonnes anyway, so it's never going to be, there's never going to be any issues with cooling or anything like that on it. So, yeah, Volvo were like, they agreed, and they're like, yeah, that truck's going to be bang on. It's a beautiful thing. It was all custom, loads of customization on it. In terms of, you know, stuff's been, the whole back wall of the cab's been done with a mural in the back of it. It's all been smoothed off and extended, and all the lights, it's been quite cleverly done. It's got like LEDs down the side of it and on the front, and yeah, really nice, impressive truck that. But he said that he used to run 6-wheelers, but it's difficult to get work for them in a lot of places these days. And I tried him as effectively a 6-wheeler on steroids, he called it, because it's got a 4-ton clear payload advantage, but it can get in all the places that a 6-wheeler can. So, yeah. I mean, 6-wheelers used to be pretty common until sort of about 20 years ago.
Yeah, yeah.
Probably not even that, but yeah, everything's moved on to... onto 8-wheelers.
Yeah, it just seems to be a bit of a default setting, doesn't it? Just to have an 8-wheeler, you know, an 8x4, rather than... I mean, there's a few Tridems up around my way, not a great deal, mostly sort of bulk blowers for animal feed, which presumably, like with farm access and whatnot, that's a definite advantage. But think they'd sort of take off a little bit more, but they don't seem to have.
Yeah, they've got their kind of niche. I think they're a little bit heavier payload-wise, so if you're not needing the ultimate manoeuvrability, some of them are 6x2s as well.
Yeah.
Tridems as well, they're not double drive, but yeah, if you're not needing the ultimate manoeuvrability, that's kind of what they tend to be all about. But it's interesting, you're seeing the price of trucks is just rocketing. They were talking about inflation's going down, but is it trucks have gone up, sort of, in some cases gone up like 40 grand in the past year or so for a chassis, and it's all down to It's basically down to the fact the truck makers have got to build, they're having to invest so heavily in alternative fuels and drivelines like electrics.
Yeah.
And that's costing them a fortune. So whether or not you have an electric truck, you are paying for them because the truck manufacturers are having to load the prices of the ones that they do sell for all the investment in the other ones, which may never even come to be much of a thing. But there you, but you just have to see. But it's, yeah, the price of stuff's like off the charts.
Yeah,
and a lot of places, you're starting to see. It seems to be that if you're wanting a good deal on something, it seems to be that MAN and Iveco are the way to go. They seem to be substantially cheaper than all the rest of them right now, as far as I can, make out. There's a lot of changes coming up for trucks going into next year, and a couple of years beyond. If it's DAF are updating their 13 litre. I thought in October that they were going to have a big surprise for us, and it was possibly going to be a new 13 litre, or they were going to relent and put the big Cummins engine in. It turned out to be neither, but they have updated the MX13 as it stands, is taking its final form, I believe, before it's ultimately replaced for Euro 7, I think.
Right.
They're down-speeding it. They've done some more clever stuff and mucked about with it to get more torque out of it at low speed, so it's going to be going along the motorway at like 950 RPM and top, with the highest diff ratio should you choose it.
Right.
So it'll really have to be running at 56 for that. MAN's their 12.4 litre, that is into its last couple of years of production. When Euro 7 comes in, they're going to move to the Scania super engine.
Right.
But it's going to be badged up as an MAN variant. It's going to be called the D, I don't know, 35 or something, I don't know. But yeah, that engine's, and it's a good engine, that 12.4.
Yeah.
But it's going to, obviously with Scania and MAN being the same company, it was inevitable that they were going to be using the same engine. I take it MAN will still be using their 15.2, which is, I think that's the D38, which goes up to 640 brake. I take it they're going to continue to use that, because they're not going to be allowed to use Scania's V8, and Scania aren't going to move to a six-cylinder. So.
No. It's funny what you said about, you know, the cost of, and with you're sort of basically paying for electric vehicles and whatnot. As a bit of a side, chatting to a friend of mine the other day, he works for a motor factors company, you know, one of these little vans delivering all the car parts, yeah. And he was chatting to him down the pub last Friday, and the company he worked for has now been bought out. He says he's got a brand new van, which he hates, because it's, I think it's a Ford, he said, and it's got, you know, electrical, everything. And, you know, he said, I'm constantly moving my head around. Then the van's flashing, telling me I've got to stop and take a break because it can see his head's wobbling. He's like, I've only been driving 2 minutes. And I just sort of said to him, you know, so I said, is it an electric van then? Because I thought, well, you know, you've got to put a charge point in at home or whatever. He said, no, it's petrol. I was like, blimey, you know, if you'd said to somebody 5 or 10 years ago, all your little vans are going to go to petrol rather than diesel, I think I would have just laughed my head off.
it's ridiculous all that. There's an issue surrounding diesel engines in cars and vans. The development's kind of ground to a halt on it, unlike trucks where they're still being developed, they're still getting better economy and power out of them. And I don't know if I'd mentioned this before in the podcast, but if you think about it now, a small diesel engine like the Corsa 1.3 CDTI, if they'd continued developing that to this day, they'd probably be getting 100 miles to the gallon out of it in a run, and that's not going to be acceptable to any governments anywhere, because that's truly efficient, and they wouldn't be making enough money if everybody's running about in vehicles that do 100 miles to the gallon. But touchscreen stuff is coming in everywhere. Like Scania's got their new touchscreen smart dash now.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I mean, across the board, trucks are taking on more and more touchscreen stuff, and I'm like, is this really progress? Who's asked for this to say this is better than having buttons on the dash for a lot of quite often important functions? Mm-hmm. It's like you don't want to have your diff lock in a touchscreen menu. You don't want your heating and ventilation controls in there. You want to be able to reach to these things when you need them. And I'm like, who's out of all of this? How is this?
Well, I think a lot of that
progressing things.
Yeah, I think a lot of that, like especially with Mercedes, I think was already, if you've got like the high-end ones, that was all in the touchscreen, wasn't it? I seem to think from driving my mate's one, when he was talking me through everything, I'm sure he said that the diff lock was in the touchscreen. And at the time, I was just thinking, that's just crazy. But I guess it's just because cars have developed like that, haven't they? Especially because there's so many more electric cars and everything's touch, you know, it's like a phone. Everyone has a touchscreen phone now, don't they? I don't know if you can still get a phone with old school buttons. You probably can, but
you can still get them. Yeah, but they're not so much like, you know, proper smartphones. But yeah, everything's going touchscreen, including the trucks. And I don't know because the things can black out as well.
Yeah,
and every touchscreen I've heard instances of the thing just going dark, and then it's got to go and get a software reset.
Yeah.
And often the things have to go to the dealers, and they've been sounding off for years about how you can do everything remotely, and the truck knows in advance before it needs maintenance. And it's like, well, why can't you do the updates remotely? And in some cases they can't. They've still got to get it in and go and plug it into a diagnostic to go and get it all done. And so you need to have an element of your essential functions not on a screen, because I was looking at, you know what American trucks are like? It's got a gauge for everything.
Yeah.
Like some of them, it's a whole bank of analog gauges because they want to know everything. They want to know what temperature the oil is and the diffs and all this kind of stuff. And I noticed like some of the new Peterbilts have got the same touch screen as the DAFs have.
Right.
But some of them had kind of moved towards two digital screens, but other ones would have a digital screen in the middle, but it would still have the big bank of analog gauges.
Yeah.
And I think that there's a happy medium to be had between this new technology and the essential functions of a truck and what you need. And it's obvious, it's all going to go in the same way. Every single one of them, they're all pushing for mirror cams to be standardised and everything, and touchscreens are going to come in and everything. And I'm dubious that there's going to be benefits to all of that. Like, but as more of the Euro sort of safety stuff comes in as well, you'll have more beeps and boops and thing, the truck telling you off for things as you go forward, and more things things will be more difficult to switch off, like your lane departure.
Yeah.
Which is just terrible on A roads and B roads, because you're constantly straddling the white line because the roads aren't wide enough. And if you can't switch that off, then the truck's just buzzing and at you constantly. So now they're kind of moving that to a menu where you've got to go in and disable it. It's not just a button on the dash. And I really hope that they don't make it so that cannot be disabled, because it's going to annoy people.
Yeah.
It's not there for when you're driving on twisty A and B roads. It's designed for when people are sitting on the motorway and there's a potential that they might fall asleep.
Yeah.
I guess.
But yeah. Well, if you had it where it would only come on at a speed of, say, over 40 miles an hour, that would be beneficial, because, again, like where I drive at the moment, it's all rural roads. I very occasionally see a little bit of dual carriageway, but most of it's A road or B road. And like I say, every day, the first thing I do when I get in the truck, do my walk-around checks, before I set off, I push the button to turn that thing off, because I know exactly where it will come on my drive if I don't, because if I've forgotten to do it, it will come on exactly the corner where I know it's going to come on. And then I'm just going to turn the thing off, because it's just annoying.
Yeah, that Renault that I had speed limit warnings in it, and it would beep and boop constantly. And it didn't have the correct speed limits in it either. You'd be in like national speed limits, and it would think it was a 30. And it was like, I had to remember and switch that off at the start. Every time you started it up, you're like, off, off. There were three things I was switching off on it. I wasn't switching the AEBS off. Don't switch that off, because you can get in trouble if you switch that off, and it tends to work very well now. But
technology
overload.
Yeah, what surprises me as well is the Arctic I drive is a 68 plate, which has got lane departure. But the eight-wheeler is a 69 plate, so it's newer, but it doesn't have it, which surprised me a little bit.
That's surprising. That was right to the end. I thought they all had to have it, like going back more years than that.
Yeah. So I don't know how it's avoided getting it. So it's just nice. It's one less thing I've got to switch off.
Well, that's it. Trust drivers to be able to do their jobs properly. Having said that, a large national haulier had tried to put a warranty claim in at Scania, I think, because it had a lot of Volvos, and apparently Volvo and Scania, where you put the coolant and where you put the oil are in the opposite places.
Right.
sorry, if where you put the screen wash and where you put the oil are in largely opposite places. And there are two instances of drivers filling the engine with screen wash.
Oh no!
Which immediately, you know, so they're trying to
blame the manufacturer.
Yeah, they were trying to get warranty on it, and they were like, no.
Yeah, I mean, in my humble experience, every truck, the oil cap is red. So
yeah, well, that does, it doesn't matter. But there's been numerous cases of people putting AdBlue in the diesel.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Like, some cases, like 300 litres of AdBlue in an empty diesel tank.
I know of one story. The hauler will remain nameless. Driver got in over 100 litres of AdBlue, realised his mistake, phoned a colleague, and the colleague, in their infinite wisdom, said, "Well, just fill it up with diesel. That'll be all right. You know, that'll dilute it." So that's what he did. Rather than phone the workshop, so he did just that and fired it up, and it didn't quite get out of the services before it went bang. And that was it. New engine job.
It's not like an old diesel engine. Where if you put some petrol in it, it tends to work the other way around. If you've got a petrol car and you put a bit of diesel in it,
yeah.
You'll get away if you go and dilute it right down. Diesels, as they got more modern, they're run at such enormous injection pressures and compression and everything that anything but the correct fuel is going to cause carnage pretty quickly. But anything can happen to anybody. It can easily happen. You know, people can drop trailers on their legs or pull CZs out just by simply getting distracted for a second by somebody coming to speak to you. Right?
Yeah, but absolutely.
The AdBlue and the diesel and the screen wash and the oil, that's a little bit on the special side.
What you said about, like, you know, dropping a trailer, as lovely as it is when people come along and start helping, I find personally it just takes me out of my routine, because like with my training, you know, with the background and doing a bit of training as well, you've got the system of black, you know, brake, legs, airlines, clip, kingpin, and then reverse it. So you just do it methodically. And if someone comes along and starts helping you, it can put you off and you forget to do, or maybe forget to do something, and actually either takes you longer or something gets forgotten, which could, it's got the potential for it to go wrong, is it? So people mean well.
Leaving like a load of ratchet straps or something sitting on the catwalk of the lorry, and you're like, anything like that, carnage, things can happen super, super quickly with that. But it's interesting, trying to get warranty claim on those engines, which will be mega, so you know, the engines will be about 40 grand a piece probably.
Yeah.
So,
I'm presuming they didn't get very far.
I
can't believe they'd even think about trying to do it, really. I mean, I could understand if we were in America, you could try and argue, because they love suing people out there, but...
I wonder. I don't know. Has it come down to a lack of training for people? I mean, I don't. People aren't. People don't maintain cars these days, and they rarely look under the bonnet or check tyre pressures or anything like that. Does it need to?
True.
Is it covered in initial driver CPC or anything like this? Where you put your oil, and this is where you need to be mindful of your AdBlue and your diesel and what will happen if you mix them up.
Well, in the car test now. And even in the truck test, you do have to, you know, in the show me tell me's, you could well be asked where you put the oil or the screen wash in the vehicle. So you have to identify that and physically lift the grid up and point out where the screen wash goes or the oil and stuff like that. And I think a lot of it as well, again, going back to the computer stuff, people get so complacent because you haven't got to lift the grill to check the oil anymore, have you? Because I think pretty much every single truck now has an electronic dipstick. I know
some of them don't have dipsticks at all, which isn't great.
Or some you can't even get to. I mean, I was last year doing some agency work driving a Mercedes Antos, I think it was. You've got to tilt the cab to actually get to the dipstick. And I think, I think the radiator, to top the coolant up, because I said it was flashing up saying the coolant level's low. That was going to have to go into the local not dealership, but whoever looked after the maintenance, to have the cab tilted to add coolant. And I just thought, who on earth designed this truck?
Yeah, that's madness. Everything should have a metal dipstick on it, which is easily accessible. These sensors and the thing to go, because once you start them, then you can't check the oil for ages anyway.
No, so exactly.
Like you wait 40 minutes before the oil level can be checked. So every last bit of it's dripped down into the sump.
Yeah, and you fire the truck up, it pressurizes the water system, so you're gonna, you know, you're not easily gonna be able to top that up. So it's just.
Technology, man. It's going too far.
Yeah.
It must be more expensive to put a sensor in there than not put a dipstick in.
Yeah.
Surely.
Maybe it isn't. I reckon there's a gap in the market. If you could get a clean enough sort of diesel engine, there's a gap in the market for somebody, a bit like Dacia did a few years ago, to build a really budget, simple, you know, car or truck without all the computer technology, and just have it more mechanical, so there's less stuff to go wrong. It'll be cheaper to buy, and it's kind of like, I think there's a bit of a gap in the market, but I don't think anyone would want to go for it, because so many people are so used to having all of their creature comforts as such, they wouldn't want to go back to it.
Yeah, it'd be difficult with the economies of scale you would have to do, because to get them up there. No, I think there would be, if we still had like the niche manufacturers, if Foden were still around, they would still be selling, you know, a couple of thousand lorries a year.
Yeah.
They would still have a loyal following in the eight-wheeler market and things, but because of the technology that's involved in everything now, everything costs like billions going forward because of all the safety systems that's got to be installed in them, and Euro 7 looks, you know, crazy. It's insane what they're doing with truck engines. Like, everywhere, as we're moving forward, the next steps towards Euro 7, like, you know,
yeah,
performances and torque is increasing across the board, as well as economy. So it's because they're all like, your Volvo are big in their turbo compound engine, which is quite often a leader in fuel economy, and the Scania Super does really, really well in fuel as well. And I was at Shuttleworth when I've been, their DAF XGs are doing like, you know, 11 mpg at times, which is just crazy. You would never have got that back in the day.
Yeah, especially with a tanker as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know you've not got the height, but they're not the most aerodynamic of things, really, are they?
Talking about back in the day, trucking driver's 40 years old this year.
Yeah.
So we're doing a special commemorative feature in the final issue of the year, which is the DAF special. So I was looking out at the 1984 issue of Trucking Driver, issue number one. I had that out today, scanning some images out it. And one of the main features in that was a Foden S106, which had a 400 horsepower Cummins in it, which was big power.
Yeah, that was huge. Yeah.
Now, it had 1,560 newton meters of torque.
Yep.
Now, your average fleet spec tractor unit these days has got 2,500 newton meters of torque. So it's only 1,000 more.
Wow. Yeah,
it just shows you the difference in the way things have gone up. It was also had a 1973 Scammel Trunker in it.
Blimey.
Twin steer one.
Yeah.
And the guy had like built his own massive sleeper cab on it. He'd extended the back and put an aerodynamic roof on it. And he'd upgraded that to 265 horsepower with his Rolls Royce, and he was getting 9 mpg at 34 tons.
Blimey.
Which is considered exceptional. But I mean, I don't know, how that truck must have looked really old in 1984.
It's not that. Am I getting confused with there's an old, I'm sure it's a Scammel show, right? No, that's a different one. I remember from being young, somebody had, I'm sure it was a Scammel, but it was like silver or metallic-y silver with like all these other colours on it. Hopefully somebody listening to this will know what I'm talking about. But it was like a, I'm sure it was a Scammel Showman, and that had like an extended sleeper, like an air, I think like an aerodyne sleeper cab, and.
I think I remember that. I'm talking about has got like the Michelotti, like the fiberglass fluted cab on.
Oh, yes. Oh, it was a Scammel Trunker, wasn't it?
A Trunker, yes. A 20 or 6x2.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was that. It was interesting looking at those trucks and then some of the old advertising as well. Some things change.
Yes,
it's that the themes of transport efficiency.
Yeah,
things like that. A lot of it's still the same today.
Yeah,
but a lot of it, the sheer variety of stuff in there as well, because there were big advertising campaigns on at the time for the Ford Cargo.
Yeah.
The Bedford TM was advertised in there quite heavily.
Yeah.
It seemed to be Foden was advertised quite a bit. And ERFs didn't really make. ERF and Seddon Atkinson weren't too prevalent. And it be also had your Leyland trucks as well, with the whole range across them. So there's just so many different trucks on the go at the time. You had your Berliers.
Yeah.
What was the other one? Steyr were about for a while, those Austrian ones.
Steyr, yeah, they did, yeah. I've mentioned it before with Paul O'Callaghan. I've got a weird penchant for a Steyr. I love them. I'd love to have one as a show truck. And there is somebody up, I think it's Lincolnshire Way, has got one, and the name completely escapes me, because they came into the country and they were only here for about a year or so, and then MAN bought them out and they just sort of disappeared. I think MAN eventually just sort of closed it all down. I think they would use them for like specialist builds and whatnot. Because which way round was it? ERF ended up with the Steyr cab on the ES8 range. Do you remember them, the rigids?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that was using that old cab. Yeah,
yeah.
That's right. Because
yeah,
they weren't about. There was one haulier, because they were featured in Truck and Driver later on, probably in the 90s.
Yeah,
who had a whole fleet of them.
Right,
and they'd bought them up left, right, and centre cheap, so they had a whole stockpile of parts to be able to keep them running for as long as possible.
Right, okay, because I know
I look back over the 40 years, I'm going to dig out some notable issues and
wonderful
and interesting stuff for it, and I'll be looking out. I'm going to be on the lookout for that, because I have seen that magazine before.
Excellent, because I think there was a company, I think it was it Martin Hayward, I think they were called, from down the West Country somewhere. They had quite a few of them, and six by fours, quite a few. I remember back in the day as well, being young, a feature on some that had 3M livery on, and I can't remember who they were, and I'm sure it was Graham Sweeting, one of the Sweetings from down the West Country again. He had like a custom show truck, and I'm, again, for the old Vintage Vault series that I've been working on, I'm kind of hoping to get on the trail of that and see what happened to that and why. So if anybody knows which Sweeting it was and how to contact them if they're still about, I would love to hear about that one, because that's one I'd love to try and find a bit more information on.
Austrian built.
Yeah,
because it was that. I guess as well, if you're talking about rare brands, you had Pegaso as well.
Oh, yeah.
Full of trucks over here with
with the Anassa cab.
The cab tech, yeah.
And that's another one. That's Paul O'Callaghan's version of Steyr. I do like a Pegaso as well. As well, because I just like unusual stuff. Because GBE Express, from down sort of my original way, they had quite a few of them. There was quite a few about, and even there was a photo turned up on Facebook the other day, because there, a few people who owned Seddon Atkinson Stratos would put the Trona grill onto the Sedaki, just for a bit of personalisation, back when customising was a lot more sort of personal.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there is a few.
A lot of stuff would be kind of homemade.
Yeah.
Almost.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
so that cab looked suspiciously like, in that Scammel, like it had quite a lot of wood involved in it.
Right, yeah.
Which, I mean, the cab was fibreglass anyway, so there's every chance that it may well have been extended using wood panels.
Yeah, more than likely.
Yeah, so I mean, you've been doing the Vintage Vault feature in Truck and Driver as well.
Yeah.
Which is looking back at notable show trucks, like famous show trucks from going back decades.
Yes, yeah. It's
what have you turned? So you've turned a few up for that.
It's getting there.
Some of the ones that you've turned up.
Yeah, so
I guess in some cases it's about putting the word out there and seeing who knows what.
That's it, yeah, and it's quite surprising what a small sort of world it is amongst it as well. I mean, the one I still really want to speak to is Graham Cordner, which I've spoke about before on a podcast. I know that because I've had a couple of people really help me out with that one, trying to get to speak to Graham himself. I kind of feel like I'm nearly there with actually making contact with him. I mean, his truck, that was very iconic. It's still about it's still about, just it needs a lot of work, but it's still around. Mm. Trevor Street is F88, which was very well known, which appeared back on the show scene last year. Should have an upcoming article on that. I've spoken to David Gill from EA Gill. He had some lovely show trucks back in the day. And I've got quite a few on the sort of hit list as such that I'm slowly working on. And I've got some information. I'm just sort of waiting on some photos from a few people, waiting on phone calls back and so on and so forth. But it's been so enjoyable getting back into it. And again, what you're saying about just like customization being done, you know, sort of homemade. One example of a chap who I've got to go and speak to is Bill Humphreys, who Humphreys of London, which people know his trucks very well. Yeah, they're all named. There's the Scarlet Pimpernel, Gay Lad, several others. He had a Leyland? Was it the Road Train Interstate with the high roof?
Yeah, one of them. Yeah, an Interstate.
He had one painted as like a Native American. But I believe his early bull bars were made of scaffold tube because they weren't available. So to create something, you had to just get in the workshop and make it. And that just seems so prevalent with the people I've been speaking to and what they've had to do. And you know, we've already had Robert Hymas's F12 Gladiator featured. And again, you know, he was saying, you know, they just get in the workshop and just fabricate stuff because there wasn't the off the shelf culture that we've got. There was no internet. There was like the trucking magazines with a few adverts and speaking to people at shows and word of mouth and getting to know people. And that's again how this whole Vintage Vault thing has kind of evolved as well. Just talking with people and like so and so will know so and so and they'll put me in touch and give me a number. And yeah, it's been so much fun and I'm really hoping it continues.
Yeah, fantastic. That's good that everybody likes a bit of nostalgia looking back at all this stuff because there's so many trucks that kind of just disappeared there, just kind of fell off.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. But what is surprising is how many have sort of survived in one form or another, which is always surprising. Like John Phillips' Master Centurion is obviously now in Ireland, but his 143 that he had before that's still about, which that should be upcoming as well, which I'm looking forward to getting that finished. But yeah, there's quite a few that have stood the test of time, surprisingly, as well, because as well, back in the day, they weren't just show trucks. They were fully working trucks. I know a lot of them are these days, but there's still...
They used to go and take them out, and some people used to race them. literally take it on track, turn the fuel pump up, and race it around Brands Hatch.
Yeah.
These guys are insane.
Yeah, slap a couple of numbers on, just bang it about, finish your race, hitch your trailer back up, and off you go again. Just wonderful, really. I know, times change and whatnot, but it really was just such a different sort of time, wasn't it, really? And again, you'll find that going through the old truck magazine, or trucking magazines, you'll see these show trucks at the time of when they were doing the shows. And it'll be interesting to see what ones are in there and which ones people have forgotten about as well, I think. If people out there have got any suggestions of particular ones they'd like me to try and look into, I'm certainly all ears because I'm well up for it.
Oh no, that's good. That I so are you just sticking it out with the driving on the wood chip and all that, the sawdust, for going forward for a bit? You don't have any trips abroad with the
not at the moment. I might do potentially. They've kind of booked me sort of loosely for next year as well because the chap is still off sick. I was only covering for a week November last year and I'm still there. But it works really well. They're really, really good people to work for. It's nice and easy. And it also gives me the time for doing writing and research and whatnot, because as I'm sure I've said before, my next book is coming out. It's going to be the end of November now, but that's coming out. And I've got several books that I'm working on at the moment as well. So the wood chip and whatnot gives me the time to sit down and do a bit of research and make phone calls and try and just plug away that sort of thing, and doing like the Vintage Vault stuff and things like that. So I'm hoping to get a bit more teaching in. I've got a friend of mine is happy to do the odd week here and there covering for me on the wood chip, just so I can drop off and go and do something else to just to keep a little bit of variety in there. I'm redoing my ADR end of November.
I've got 35 hours of CPC I need to do next year.
Yeah. I am now certified to teach ADR as well, but I'll get my ADR redone, and I can also get some tips on how to teach it, because it's a lot more involved than teaching driver CPC. Because it's very time critical, and you've got to cover this and that and the other. So I want to sit in on a few courses before I actually deliver one, because the CPC.
Yeah, good idea. Yeah, because you do rattle through everything quickly with ADR.
Yeah, because you've got a lot to
absorb.
Yeah, absolutely.
In a short period of time. Yeah, so I reckon it's like one of the best things you can do for CPC, because you get a useful qualification out of it, which
absolutely
get you some extra work.
Well, that's it. I mean, because you
do it anyway.
Yeah, because you never know what's around the corner, do you? I mean, admittedly, before I had my ADR, I'd never really lost work because I didn't have it. But having it just opens up that much many more doors. If the company you work for go skint and you've got to find a new job, then if you've got an ADR and the other person hasn't, and you're potentially more likely to get that job. And like I say, it counts towards your CPC, and you actually learn something like... Whereas compared with some of the other driver CPC courses, which are just very sort of mind numbing, aren't they? I think is a way to put it.
Yeah, there's a large difference between what ADR is good and what isn't, and everything else.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I try my best to make driver CPC courses as interesting and entertaining as I can, because I know that none of them drivers want to be there, especially because it's normally a Saturday. They're having to give up a day of their weekend to come and sit and listen to me waffle on for the entire day. But some of the particular modules are just challenging to not only the student, but also the teacher. So just bear with your instructor if you're doing a driver CPC course. There's only so much we can do.
I've got a lot of stuff to organise with that. I've got a DAF. XF 480 in a couple of weeks' time. I'll be out in the milk tankers with Shuttleworth with that.
Yeah,
with it being, because it's the transport efficiency model, so it's got mirror cams. Every demo I'm going to get is going to have these cameras on it, pretty much going forward, I think, unfortunately, because I don't
I personally am a big fan, but I know that one of the biggest issues is going to be people's eyesight as they get older. Your eyesight naturally deteriorates. Mm-hmm. Can't help that. Whether you're going to really actually have an issue driving the vehicles. So I know people already who can't drive them because they can't focus on the screen.
I don't like it.
I
don't like the fact that it doesn't, the field of vision doesn't move if I move my head.
Yeah.
And it's just that sometimes the what you're seeing on the monitor isn't as clear as what you would see in a mirror. So I'm just, and it's complicated technology for the sake of technology. I know that they're like getting better and better and they're finally overcoming it, and it's like, oh yeah, but
yeah,
you know, a mirror's a mirror, and it's been fine for as long as we've had trucks. But yeah, that DAF,
I was going to say, have you tried the new Volvo system?
I did at Volvo, and it was fine. I've spoken to somebody who's got one of them, and he's not too keen on it. But
right.
I tend to find that quite a lot. That I don't know. Whenever I'm out in the wild talking to people, more often than not, the people that have got them aren't particularly keen on them. But then again, there are guys out there that like them. I know that there's fleets that have gone back to mirrors after just because of the hassle of drivers not liking it.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, they're like, but it saves 1% fuel. And I'm like, yeah, but most people go and stick light bars and stuff on trucks. They don't care about 1%.
Yeah,
true. If I'm going to get that. So, yeah, I'm hoping that DAF is probably going to be quite set up to get really good MPG sitting on the motorway all day, which I won't be doing. So I'm curious to see what the new XF's like, because it's not like the old one. It's smaller. It's probably... Yeah, it sits in between the XG and the little XD, which is like the CF. So
yeah,
we shall see how that goes.
Yeah.
Hopefully it's doing 56 as well. So many trucks don't do 56 anymore. You know, everything's a bit under calibrated, really, to be honest.
Yeah, very true.
Yeah, just to finish this one off, not truck related, but more car related. I'm just curious because you sent me some pictures beforehand of an Astra GTE.
Yeah. Yes, I did.
Which I believe it's something that you've turned up in a driveway.
Yeah.
Who remembers? I mean, if we're talking about nostalgia, the Astra GTE was one of the fastest hot hatches of its day. This is a J Reg in white. It's an 2-litre 8-valve. You're going to get it. If I'm not going to get it, I might get it.
Hopefully. And I believe it's got a Digifont dashboard as well, which...
Yeah, it's got the digital dash in it, yeah.
Yeah, which really appeals to me. So, it's... Like I said to you, it's a friend of mine. It was his father's who's passed away, and they basically want it to go to a good home. So I'm just waiting to hear back from the rest of the family. Now, I'm on holiday next week with this guy. I'm off to Egypt for a week's diving. So presumably when this one comes out, I shall be in the middle of the Red Sea with no signal. So I'll have no idea that it's actually come out. And probably gonna be when I get back to land that I'll actually... hopefully, fingers crossed, get a few messages from people about various things and whatnot. But we shall have a chat a bit more about it there then. I would like to ideally get it and just do it. Hopefully it won't need too much, but if it's been sat in a driveway, it could. It's just the underside, isn't it, how bad that's going to be. So
if it was all right when it was parked up, it will still be all right now. Yeah. If it's just parked in a driveway, that doesn't rot them out, really.
Yeah.
The worst thing is like the interior trim, like the roof lining comes down in them.
Yeah, everything.
Everything like that. But that's interesting, that, because it's the last of the Mark IIs and a J-Reg. Hopefully that...
It'd
be interesting to find out the last time it was started.
Yes.
Because unless it's got perished fuel hoses, that'll probably fire right up.
Yeah.
Might need a fuel pump on it. Yeah, I love a driveway find like that's such a rare thing these days.
Yeah, they are, yeah.
Yes, because now, of course, Matt, you've been to a couple of truck shows since you last spoke. I believe you were at Swedfest?
I certainly was, yeah. For me, it rounded off my show year because I think it was one or two weeks afterwards was the Drifter Style show in Ireland, which I'm going to put in my diary for next year because that looks phenomenal. I think it's all under roof, you know, it's inside as such. It looks absolutely amazing. But yeah, I got along to Swedfest. Now, I know I'm going on holiday next week, but I've just had a 2-week holiday in Corfu as well. And unfortunately, I didn't fly back until the Saturday of Swedfest. So I missed Saturday, which is a real shame because I've missed the first day and the light show. I actually got home at midnight Saturday night. But I got up in the morning and got myself across there. And, you know, I recorded a podcast with Rob Billman, you know, the main man behind Swedfest, not forgetting Michelle, of course. And I've said it before and I'll say it again. It's just an absolutely fantastic, wonderful show. I get it if you don't particularly like Volvo or Scania, that you won't want to go. But just the way it's laid out, it's also fantastic for photography because there's no gazebos, there's no barbecues, there's nothing... All of that sort of clutter as such is not allowed. So you've just got an inch perfect line of trucks facing off year after year, you know, and you can just walk around and just see the evolution of truck manufacturing because you've got like the 70s into the 80s into the 90s. So you've got like, for argument's sake, you've got the version 1 FHs lined up against the 3 Series Scanias. And then, you know, as it moves down the line, getting later and later, you then get into the 4 Series Scania, then the FH2s, the FH3s, and it's, although it's there is rivalry there, it's still got a great atmosphere. It's really cheap to get in. There's stuff for all the family to do. Next year I'm determined to take something. I don't know what, because my mate's F16, I don't think it's going to be ready. It might be, it might not. So I'm going to have to sort of hatch a plan for a couple of sort of alternatives as such. But I really want to do the entire weekend next year to see the light show and to just have the whole time there. Because, again, it was like the retro show. It just goes so quickly, especially just doing it for one day, trying to catch up with people and chat with people. Just ran out of time. But it was a wonderful show and Drifter Style as well. I've got to get that in the diary for next year, make sure that I go across because it looks... amazing. The quality of the trucks there is just, I mean, the quality of show trucks throughout the UK and from what I've seen in Europe, it just seems to get higher and higher every year. And it's not just full-on show trucks. The actual work and what people do with working trucks, like Craig Butterfield, who works for H.B. Holt, his Volvo, you could eat your dinner off of it. It's that clean. Yeah, a lot of the time it's in fields doing turf and stuff like that. It's mind-boggling to me how clean people can keep trucks. It really is, and it's a real credit to them.
Yeah, it's phenomenal commitment to be able to do stuff like that. And as trucks get more, as people have to invest more in them to buy them in the first place.
Yeah,
if in some cases they're more keen to go and invest into it because it's such a big investment. You know, it's worth putting extra into to make it that bit more special.
Yeah,
because you've got to have it you've got to keep it for a while. And yeah, if it's such a big outlay, then why wouldn't you want to make it as good as possible?
Absolutely, and it's also the other end of that spectrum as well is. Because it's such a big outlay, people are then prepared to pay extra for paint and colour coding yeah. things and so on and so forth, rather than think, blimey, this is costing me £200,000. It's going to stay white. We're just going to put a few stickers on it and that'll be that, you know. People still are doing nice traditional liveries and things like that. And some of the restorations better than new and whatnot. I'm just trying to think off the top of my head, but I can't of some of them. There was a Mac, I think it was. Oh, no, it might have been a white Road Commander, a drifter style that I saw photos of. That yeah. it was in tribute. But I can't think for the life of me who it was in tribute to, which is really frustrating. Has been quite a long day, to be fair. That's my excuse.
Yeah. Not so worry, but we'll round it off at that.
Yeah.
Thanks very much, Matt. I shall be catching up with you again soon. Good luck with Egypt
and thank you.
The Astra and the Vintage yes. Vault. Anybody's got anything coming up with, let us that can help out with any of those vintage show trucks, let us know. Cool.
Yeah.
Right, Sam. Take care. I will catch up with you again soon.
Marvellous. Thanks ever so much, Doug.
Cheers.
Bye. Bye. Ta-da. Bye.